Late last month, the National Labor Relations Board, or NLRB, ruled that football players at Northwestern University qualify as employees under federal law and can therefore unionize. The decision has been divisive. While some applaud the move to provide players with more rights and financial compensation, others fear that the collegiate athletic system will be destroyed by the move. This week, Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon co-authored an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal against unionizing players. To break down this case, we are joined today by Robert and Amy McCormick. Both are Michigan State law professors emeritus. Together, they've produced years of scholarship focusing on athletes and their relationship to the NCAA, including the often cited Law Review, The Myth of the Student Athlete, The College Athlete as Employee. Amy and Robert, thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Robert, you're an expert in labor law, but what made you decide to focus your legal expertise on the issue of college athletes?
Well, it's an interesting story. It started really about 10 years ago. Amy and I were watching the men's basketball tournament, March Madness. We're big Spartan fans, and we kept noticing that the NCAA would run these advertisements in which they emphasized that the athletes at the various schools would be going pro in something else. That was the standard line at that point. They have a new one now, which indicates that the NCAA is there as kind of cheerleaders and backup for the athletes themselves. And we noticed that this ad would run repeatedly, many, many times during the course of the tournament. And we began to wonder why that would be the case. Why would the NCAA run this public relations bit over and over again, because of course that advertising space is very, very expensive. Mm-hmm. And so they weren't selling any products particularly. They weren't generating any particular revenue from this. And we began to wonder what is this? Why are we hearing this over and over again, that these young people are going to go pro in something else other than their sports? At the same time, Amy was reading the biography of Walter Byers, who was a longtime executive director of the NCAA for decades. After he retired, he wrote what I guess is a confessional in which he revealed that the NCAA had invented the term student athlete that we see everywhere now. Student-athlete, in response to a decision in the Colorado courts that held that a young man who had been a football player for his university and had been injured in the course of his football time there was an employee of the university, was entitled to workers' compensation for his job-related injuries. And the NCAA was very alarmed by this decision by the courts, and Byers immediately coined the term student athlete and required every member of the NCAA to use that term exclusively when they're talking about scholarship athletes at their universities. And that piqued our curiosity. I had never really thought that they might be employees. It had never crossed my mind. And I thought, well, is that true? Was Colorado correct that this young man was an employee instead of a student? So we began to look into it. And we did our legal research as to what constitutes an employee. And concluded ultimately that there's no question in our minds that in fact they are employees.
Amy, let's kind of break down how you guys got to that conclusion. And I think a good place to start is with the national with the board's decision regarding Brown University. Okay. And their TAs.
Yes. Brown University had a situation where research assistants and teaching assistants wanted to unionize, wanted better working conditions, maybe better pay, and they tried to unionize, and Brown University, the institution, opposed that move, and that culminated in a decision by the NLRB, which looked at what do you what standard exists to decide whether someone is an employee. In this case, a student is an employee of the university. And the Brown Board, by that I mean the NLRB, when it decided the Brown case, it did a two-part analysis. First, it looked to the common law definition of employee, which looks to whether the student provides services for Brown University in exchange for compensation, and do they do that under the control or right of control of the university. That means, does the university have the right to determine how the student goes about performing the services? And so that those three elements are part of the common law right of control test, which the Brown Board used in assessing whether these students were employees. Then the board also went on and said, when it comes to students at a university, we are going to look beyond the sole common law test. We're going to look at, in addition, we're going to look at what is the relationship between the student and the university. Maybe these students are providing their services as part of their education. And if so, we shouldn't just look to whether they provide services in exchange for compensation and whether they are under the control of the university in terms of how they provide those services. And so the board said, when we do this extra analysis for students, we are going to ask, what are the students in providing those services, is their relationship with the university primarily academic or something else, more primarily economic or primarily commercial? And to simplify things a bit, the more commercialized the relationship is between the student and the university, and the less primarily academic it is, the more likely the board would decide that these are employees. So if you meet both the common law three-part test that I described earlier, and if you can say that the relationship between the two parties is primarily commercial and not primarily academic, then yes, that person will be viewed as an employee. And we took this very test, this two-part test, and asked ourselves, how does this apply to athletes? And we limited our analysis to football players and men's basketball players at Division I schools, the revenue-generating sports,
yeah,
because of what Brown said about the relationship having to be commercial. You can look at all student athletes, and they probably all meet the common law test for being an employee. They all provide athletic services in exchange for their athletic scholarship, which can be pulled if they stop playing their sport. And they are under massive control by the university. So all athletes at those schools probably meet the common law test for being an employee. But when it comes to the extra tests set out in Brown requiring a commercial relationship, that's harder to prove when you're talking about a tennis player, mm-hmm, or a soccer player or a wrestler. But it's very present when you're talking about a football player or a men's basketball player. And so we came to the conclusion, for a number of reasons, after looking at the facts of the situation, that these guys really do constitute employees under those tests.
I think a lot of people, Robert, would say they're student athletes. They're students. How is this an economic relationship? Can you kind of expand upon that a little bit and put into context for us how much these sports are commercialized and the money being made off of them?
Yeah, we really, neither of us played college sports, so we were really unaware of, the daily lives of these young men. And so we spoke to a number of them. We interviewed a number of current and former athletes at basketball players and football players at Division I schools, a variety of schools. And we were really, I think we were both really surprised at the level of control that is exercised over their lives. It's just pervasive. Many times these young men will work 40, 50, 60 hours a week doing their athletic-related activities. And it just simply doesn't leave time for a young person to put all that work into their sport and actually undertake an intellectual endeavor to study in a in an intellectual sense the studies that they might otherwise take up. So that surprised us, and we were quite surprised that at the level of control. In fact, I would say that there's more control over these young men than any other employee at the university. nobody ever asked us to get up at 5:30 and lift weights and do all of the things that they have to do. And of course, you asked specifically about the commercial aspect of it, and I think probably this audience will know that. Football and men's basketball are enormously lucrative enterprises, multi-billion-dollar industry, college sports, multi-billion-dollar industry. In Michigan State alone, the athletic budget is over $80 million. And that is all generated by football, primarily football, but also men's basketball players. Unlike soccer or softball or wrestling, and all of these athletes work very hard. They work very, very hard for their sports. There's no question in my mind about it. But we couldn't make the argument that it was that they were primarily here for commercial purposes. On the other hand, or by contrast, I guess we concluded that the football players and the men's basketball players were at the university not primarily for their education. Not primarily for their academic advancement or their intellectual development, but primarily to field winning football and men's basketball teams. So with that conclusion, really the outcome in our minds was unavoidable that they meet all of the standards of the common law test, the three-part standard that Amy just described. They are here primarily, unlike teaching assistants or research assistants, who are basically advancing their own intellectual interests when they're doing their work, as in the Brown case. These young men are not here primarily for that purpose. They're not primarily here to advance their education. They're here primarily for their athletic ability. That's not to say that some of them don't get an education and some of them don't go on and do good things and advance their minds and so forth in the process. But we're talking about their primary purpose here. And given the demands on their time and their efforts and their energy, we could not conclude they were primarily here to advance their education.
And speaking with Robert and Amy McCormick, law professor, emeritus law professors at Michigan State University, they've written a lot of groundbreaking work and scholarship on the legal status of student athletes. There's been a lot of concern over the decision to allow the Northwestern players on the football team to unionize. Some are saying this is the end of college sports as we know it. Is it the end?
far from it.
we don't believe so.
Yeah, far from it. First of all, there are enormous sums of money involved, and college sports is very popular. We love it too. We're season ticket holders, and we'll be there in the fall. And so people love sports, and we love sports, and there's no reason to think that this will damage it in any way. And really, I think there's such a tremendous misunderstanding about the significance of this decision, because let's assume for the moment, and that's they're pretty big assumptions, that the regional director's decision gets upheld on appeal and the board affirms it and the Court of Appeals affirms it and the players actually vote to join the union, because we haven't had the vote yet.
After all of this
After all of that, right. They may vote no, they don't want the union, in which case the whole thing goes away. But let's assume all of those things happen. The decision's upheld and the players vote to join the union. All that means is that Northwestern University would have to sit down and negotiate with the players regarding certain subject matters. It doesn't mean they'd have to give in on anything or change their position in any way. It just requires that management bargain with organized labor over certain subject matters. So the union has made it quite clear that they're not going to undertake some proposal that will put the university out of compliance with NCAA rules. That would be foolhardy.
So, I mean, what are they asking for then?
Go ahead.
They're asking for better medical coverage, including for injuries that they get from football after they graduate. The way things stand right now, someone could get a very bad injury that causes them problems down the line that requires multiple surgeries. And once their eligibility is over, they're really they're on their own unless Northwestern decides to be generous and cover them. But Northwestern doesn't have to do that. So they would like some better guarantees in terms of medical coverage. They would like to have independent people on the sidelines to consider experts on concussions. That's something that people involved in that union have been asking for informally from the NCAA and from conferences for at least 10 years and haven't gotten anywhere. But that's one of the things that they're asking for. They would like for athletes, and this would require an NCAA rule change, so they won't get this unless the NCAA changes their rules. They would like for athletes to be able to profit off of their likeness or image. Right now, the athletes have to sign away that right that most people have in their image, so that the only people who can profit off the athlete's likeness or image are the schools and the NCAA. They would like to change that. An athlete would like to be able to run a camp during summer. If it's a wrestler, I mean, we're not talking about wrestlers, but if it's a wrestler, they'd like to run a wrestling camp during the summer and to be able to earn some money to, you know, cover some of their other expenses. They'd like to reform scholarships so that it includes the entire cost of attending the university. Right now, the athletic scholarships are limited, and they fall short by a couple thousand dollars a year of what it really takes to go to school. And that's a hardship for some of these players.
One other thing I think they're looking for, and neither of us is involved with the union. We just wrote the article. But one other thing they're looking for, I think, is the opportunity for the young men to be able to return to campus after their college, after their playing days are over, so they can actually complete their studies cost-free. So the scholarship would be not just their years of eligibility, but give them an opportunity when they're not spending 40, 50 hours a week
playing football. So they can be a
student athlete. Right. And with the emphasis on student.
And student in that case.
Most people don't realize that those scholarships can be pulled.
Well, we'll be keeping an eye on this for sure. Robert and Amy McCormick are law professors, emeritus at Michigan State University. Together, they've written a groundbreaking scholarship on the legal status of student athletes. Amy and Robert, thanks for your time.
Thanks for having us.
It was a pleasure.